Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Avidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Lila Chapter 6 The Meeting of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Raghunath Das Goswami Page 125, verses 126 to 154. Lord Nityananda gives Raghunath Das blessings to attain the shelter of Lord Chaitanya. 36, 126 to 154. In the morning, after taking his bath in the Ganges, Nityananda Prabhu sat down with his associates beneath the same tree under which he had previously sat. Raghunath Das went there and worshipped Lord Nityananda's feet, lotus feet. Through Raghava Pandit, he submitted his desire. I am the lowest of men, the most sinful, fallen, and condemned. Nevertheless, I desire to take shelter, attain shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like a dwarf who wants to catch the moon, I have tried my best many times, but I have never been successful. Every time I tried to go away and give up my home relationships, my father and mother unfortunately kept me bound. No one can attain the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without your mercy. But if you are merciful, even the lowest of men can attain shelter at his lotus feet. Although I am unfit and greatly afraid to submit this plea, I nevertheless request you, sir, to be especially merciful towards me by granting me shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Placing your feet on my head, give me the benediction that I may achieve the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without difficulty. I pray for this benediction. After hearing this appeal by Raghunath Das, Lord Nityananda Prabhu smiled and told all the devotee, Raghunath Das's standard of material happiness is equal to that of Indra, the King of Heaven. Because of the mercy bestowed upon him by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Das, although situated in such material happiness, does not like it at all. Therefore, let every one of you be merciful toward him and give him the benediction that he may very soon attain the shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One who experiences the fragrance of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna does not value even the standard of happiness available in Brahma Loka, the topmost planet, and what to speak of heavenly happiness. Quote, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is offered sublime poetic prayers by those trying to attain his favor. Thus he is known as Uttama Shloka. Being very eager to gain the association of Lord Krishna, King Bharata, although in the prime of youth, gave up his very attractive wife, affectionate children, most beloved friends, and opulent kingdom, exactly as one gives up stool after excreting it. 65. This verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam 5:14-43. Then Lord Nityananda Prabhu called Raghunath Das near him, placed his lotus feet upon Raghunath Das's head, and began to speak. My dear Raghunath Das, he said, since you arranged the feast on the bank of the Ganges, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here just to show you his mercy. By his causeless mercy, he ate the chipped rice and milk. Then, after seeing the dances of the devotees at night, he took his supper. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gaurahari, came here personally to deliver you. Now rest assured that all the impediments meant for your bondage are gone. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will accept you and place you under the charge of a secretary, Shri Damodar. You will thus become one of the most confidential internal servants and obtain shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Being assured of all this, return to your own home. Very soon, without impediments, you will attain shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Nityananda had Raghunath Das blessed by all the devotees, and Raghunath Das offered his respects to their lotus feet. After taking leave of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and then all the other Vaishnavas, Sri Raghunath Das consulted secretly with Raghava Pandit. After consulting with Raghava Pandit, he secretly delivered 100 gold coins and about 7 tolas of gold into the hand of Nityananda Prabhu's treasurer. Raghunath Das admonished the treasurer, "Do not speak about this to Lord Nityananda Prabhu now, but when he returns home, kindly inform him about this presentation." How much is a tola? Tola is 28, right, grams? I think a tola is 28.
In the earlier times, I remember once speaking, earlier time tolas were near about a kilo.
That makes sense. But I'm not
seven
sure what
tolas. He said 7 tolas.
Said 7 tolas of gold and 100 gold coins. So the coins were bigger than now.
Yeah.
So they, I thought a tola was an ounce. It might be, it used to be bigger, yeah. Because there should be a difference between the tolas and the coins. You know, because 100 coins is, that's like, you know, spending money, right? The gold is, you can do something serious with. Thereupon, Raghava Pandit took Raghunath Das to his home. After inducing him to see the deity, he gave Raghunath Das a garland and sandalwood pulp. He gave Raghunath Das a large quantity of prasad to eat on his way home. Then Raghunath Das again spoke to Raghava Pandit. "I want to give some money," he said, "just to worship the lotus feet of all the great devotees, servants and subservants of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. As you think fit, give 20, 15, 12, 10, or 5 coins to each of them." Raghunath Das drew up an account of the amount to be given and submitted it to Raghava Pandit, who then made a list showing how much money was to be paid to each and every devotee. With great humility, Raghunath Das placed 100 gold coins and about 2 tolas of gold before Raghava Pandit for all the other devotees. After taking dust from the feet of Raghava Pandit, Raghunath Das returned to his home, feeling greatly obliged to Lord Nityananda Prabhu because of having received his merciful benediction. You found?
I have to check in our material, Maharaj.
Oh, because there it mentions. There was some place that there was something where it described that.
Yeah, in our math material.
In math, okay.
Hard, what would have been Raghunandas's age at that point?
23, 24.
Early 20s.
Early 20s, okay.
Yeah, because I mentioned before, when he... Man, I think it was 23 then he got the shelter of Lord Chaitanya or something. Because it mentioned, in, you know, he was born in...
94.
Yeah, 94, and then it was, I can't remember what it was. It was...
1517, then he went.
Yeah, it might have been right at the beginning, right? The chapter?
Yes, ma'am.
That was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was discussing.
Because I think he was just a teenager when Haridas took over.
3-6, and it was 3-5. Okay, that's here. That was in... Wasn't that in the beginning here?
Introduction of the chapter, Maharaj.
Adhyaya Prakashika. But it's not mentioning...
Maybe it's the beginning of the...
Yeah, here. Okay. He was born in 1494, but nevertheless he managed to escape to meet Gaudapuri. This incident took place in 1517. So that means 17 and 6.
23.
So he was 23 when he got away. So this would have been just before that. You know. Yeah, so like here he'd be either at some time he's 23 or might be 22 now.
So he's staying in Puri for 12 years with Lord Chaitanya. So he's mid-30s, and then from mid-30s to his 90s in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
But that's what
was said, you know,
mm-hmm.
he lived a long life, most of the tetragrammaton.
Mm.
So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In his 90s.
Yeah, see how expert he was. He was taking care of all that things with the government ministers and all that, you know, his late teens, early 20s. And so, knows what to do. Also, at that age, then, he's also, like Nityananda Prabhu said, he had the opulence of Indra at that. And so, they're not, in that way, they're not really exaggerating and making it about what your position is and what you have, then that's there, you know.
So he did not need to ask his father for money, he just had access to funds.
Yeah, he probably had a room and he just go in there with a shovel and bucket it, right? That's the coins you need. Yeah, so here we see Lord Nityananda Prabhu, so he knows all the things, you know, because he's the Supreme Lord. And, you know, how he'll go, he's telling, you know, how he'll be taken care of and everything like that. But you see, it's also, it's the, that etiquette of getting the blessings of all the Vaishnavas and that kind of aspect like that, that they have there, and then Lord Nityananda Prabhu is giving his mercy. So the mercy of the Vaishnavas and the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Then you can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But it's by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya that you can get the mercy of the Vaishnavas and Lord Nityananda Prabhu. So when Lord Nityananda Prabhu sees Lord Chaitanya is pleased, then he gives his mercy. Like that. So it's the whole thing, it goes together. So you can't just worship Lord Chaitanya alone without Lord Nityananda. Like that, yes.
And this is the difference between material and spiritual. Material objects, whatever they are, they are always in opposition.
Mm.
But the spiritual one nourishes the other.
Mm.
So I just learned recently, it's like a spiral.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Spiral.
Yeah, spiral. So you go
unless
up.
Unless it's pasta, then it's spiroli.
No, it's like this. So you go up, and without contradicting, because devotees nowadays, they look, you know, closely to what contradicts, you know, one principle contradicts the other.
Yeah, yeah, and then they get bewildered by that.
But here we see the Diksha and Shiksha, they nourish one another.
Mm-hmm.
And then you progress and going up,
mm-hmm.
just not by contradicting those principles, but by being nourished by those principles. And it's very wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then just taking that, a branch of that, or then it would mean if someone is seeing contradictions between the different acharyas or, you know, the devotees or the forms of the Lord, then that means they're not actually using the spiritual knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's one of the things Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is in the spiritual, it means we say it, achintya veda veda tattva. By that achintya shakti, that's the thing, is that the internal potency has that achintya shakti in which opposites are reconciled and there's no difficulty. You know, he's unlimited, but he's medium-sized. He's completely independent, that Mother Jashoda is, you know, chastising and tying him up with a rope. You know, he's beyond everything, but at the same time, he's approachable by the devotee. You know, he's greater than the greatest, but he comes under the control of that affection of the devotee. So all these inconceivable opposites in the achintya shakti are not a problem. And so if one's seeing that there's differences, and especially if the conclusion of that is one can't have faith in these things, then that means one's not working under the spiritual potency. It would just be a good point to be appreciated. Otherwise, it's thought, because we're saying from the modern academy, it's that anything that can be discussed, then there's the idea that being able to intellectually discuss things, that itself is the authority and the value of it. that you can have discussions and have opposites of opinion and not come to a conclusion, that's considered a valuable discussion. You know, it's just broadening how you're looking and bringing in other angles. And, you know, so they use all the principles of logic and vichar and all that, but not for the spiritual realization, not for coming close to the Lord, but for, you know, simply tasting the, you know, the taste that they get from intellectual, you know, speculation. You know, so that would mean that if these things are going on, it's not actually that favorable for devotees, because it doesn't enhance devotion, especially if there's any pride involved. Because whenever there's pride, then in the heart you can't, bhakti doesn't take, you know, is not nourished. That's why Lord Chaitanya, when he's talking about the action, you know, being situated properly so you can perform action, or being stable in devotional service, nishtha, then the first point is humility and tolerance. Respect for others, not looking for respect. Then you can actually do something. And then with that mood, then you can give up all material desire by the, you know, grace of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. Then you don't have any, that brings you to taste, that brings you to attachment, i.e. Nandana Tanucha, like that. So it's just, so it's not, even though it's thought to be, you know, more elevated, more advanced and all that, that you can have all these things and bring up all these things, but it's actually not. It's reconciling. That's the thing that you talk about. When it talks about the Puranas and others, they introduce like persons like Narad Muni especially, and others, is that he can reconcile all seemingly contradictory statements in the Vedas. That's his glory. So therefore, it's not really a glory to be able to find contradictions, and even less of a glory if one is distracted or bewildered by them, or even worse, that it creates a situation where it lessens one's enthusiasm or commitment or faith, you know, in the process. So here's Nityananda Prabhu is giving that mercy, and by his grace you have no, because he's already pointing out that he doesn't have any material attachment. So it's not just saying he's a householder, he's very detached and this and that. He points out he has the material facility of Indra, and he doesn't care for it. So that means he's already has that mercy. But now it's just that you know, the formality of then receiving. And so you see he goes through that very nicely, and according to his position he reciprocates very nicely. So he wants to take care, because he's gotten the mercy of Lord Nityananda, so, you know, being, because they are, as it mentions, you know, the family is, they're pound shillings and pence wallahs, and so then, you know, they that's natural for them to reciprocate. So then he there gives a nice donation to Lord Nityananda Prabhu, but then, because he got the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, then he, you know, he doesn't know all the devotees, but Raghava Pandit does. And so then, according to Raghava Pandit, then, you know, who should get what and how much and all that. So they sit down and work out everything, how many, you know, because he already mentions that, you know, it's going to be, what is it? As you think fit, give 20, 15, 12, 10, or 5. You know, so someone who is you know, would be more, you know, not as, you know, whatever would be the natural deserving position, either by the advancement or the position they're in, or, you know, some kind of responsibility or authority or that, because that all has to be balanced, right? Because you have so many different categories, you have to balance all those and come up. And so Raghava Pandit is able to do that, and then they count it all up, and then he gave all, you know, whatever's to be given. And this is just what he's, you know, this is just, you know, it's like you're going to go out, you put some, you know, you put something in your pocket, like this, like marwaris, they go out, and, you know, they'll take one of those, you know, bank bundles, and they stick it in their pocket. You know, they may get nothing, but just in case you see something you want, then, you know, you have it. So, you know, he goes out, and, you know, so he takes a few wheelbarrows of gold coins with him, and if he needs, then he does. So you see here, he bought all that stuff, you know, it fed everybody, and then it gives to Lord Nityananda, it gives to the Vaishnavas. You know, so he reciprocates, he appreciates. It's not like, hey, devotees, you know, like that, you know. It's a matter of... They were telling you something? Or?
Yeah. Says the voice is breaking a little bit.
I'm not talking very loud. Advantages and disadvantages. In other words, devotionally it's an advantage, technically it's a disadvantage. Right? Talking in this mode, in this, but, you know, if, yeah. if you're using the element of kutinati, then it's technically it's very good because you talk louder with more emphasis and all that, but devotionally it's not so good. So, get one or the other. So,
Maharaj, Tula is 4.11 kg.
Hmm?
Tula is actually 4.11 kilos.
4.1, and that's kilos. 4.11 kilos.
And when it said that Shamantakamani, every day it was giving 8 bharas. One bara is 82 kilos.
And how many bharas was it giving?
8.
8 bharas, 82 kilos.
That's 640.
640 kilos a day. So that's then how the king was. He had a solid gold altar in which he would do sacrifices.
There's from 9 carats to 24 carats. So maybe they were dealing in 9 carats only.
I would think that they would be dealing in either 24 or 22.
Yeah, I think...
Means the Indian standard is... Yeah. Means that I know if it's raw, it's 24. But if it's ornaments, it's 22.
22, yeah.
But they were not going to Dubai in those days.
Dubai.
No, Dubai used to come here.
Because they have no oil.
No, if you go back 50 years like that, they only had pearls.
Yeah, right.
50 years ago, there was no Dubai. It's only crazy.
Yeah. You know, there's the old part of the city, and there's the canal.
Right.
So they all had boats. They were all pearl divers. So it's only the last some years. Like, you see pictures of Dubai 50 years ago, it's just
sand.
It's just sand.
It started in 1990.
Yeah.
Only.
1990, that's all, yeah, right. But I mean, you know.
I mean, they were shepherds and all that stuff.
Yeah, they were just all that really stuff like that. I think it was Abu Dhabi had.
Abu Dhabi.
They were the big wallets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hence, what is it? Burj Al Khalifa.
Mm.
It's supposed to be named after the local king, but it's named after the Abu Dhabi king. Because he had to bail him out.
Somebody posted a picture on Facebook how would look the British Museum if they would give... Yeah, if they give out all the artifacts that were stolen over the years from all over the place, and it's just empty room.
Oh, there.
British Museum.
Yeah, the British Museum. How would it look?
They could have a glass bottle of what they used to use for delivering milk. They could have a rock from the Moors.
Yeah,
wrong. They estimate $300 trillion.
$300 trillion, they stole.
What they took from India.
From India?
From India.
Oh, yeah, because they took from Egypt. They took from everywhere.
Yeah. Egypt, you wouldn't have gotten as much. I mean, unless you're selling mummies or something.
Mummies.
Yeah. Mummies had some.
Oh, they had stuff with them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's.
Mummies were.
Just in case, you know.
They were equipped.
Just in case while they were going.
Except for the cats, everything else stayed.
Oh, really? The cats didn't go with them? They couldn't get them inside.
They did, but they died.
They deteriorated.
The gold stuff remained.
Okay. So only the gold remains. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the way basically most places are, especially in Europe. I mean, that whole Renaissance and all that was from all their going around the world and doing their collection. Otherwise, France, they had plenty of, wild boars and
Yeah.
What's it, menhirs or whatever?
Champignons?
Yeah, that's it.
Or truffles.
Truffles. That's the whole point, is that's why you hunt the boars, because they eat all the truffles. So if you get rid of the boars, you get the truffles.
Well, the boars, they sniff them.
Yeah. Well, that's the wild ones?
No, not the wild ones.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The wild ones eat them, and so you have to use the local ones to sniff them. So then, you know, it's they have their hands full, you know, keeping busy now.
That's why when Prabhupada was interviewed in London by this reporter, he says, why have you come here? Prabhupada said, well, you took so much out of India, but you forgot to take the most important thing, which is Krishna consciousness.
That's far out. Yeah, yeah. It took so much. Yeah, what to do. Yeah, the fun part is they take everything and then complain how they're poor and you know, uncultured and everything like that. That's after taking everything, you know. What to do? Yeah, so then he's, you know, Raghunath Das returned to his home feeling greatly obliged to Lord Nityananda Prabhu because of having received his merciful benediction. So he got his benediction by his influence. He got the Vaishnavas he gave. Then he brought Lord Chaitanya there, like that. So we even see is what Nityananda Prabhu is doing. Even he's taking that humble mood and saying, you know, the Vaishnavas and Lord Chaitanya came. He never say that he gave, it's by his grace, even though he's arranged all those things. He arranged the festival. He arranged the Lord Chaitanya came, like that. So
it's a fine line. I mean, except if you're very advanced, but you know, let's say you want to feed the Vaishnavas, or you want to give a donation. Sometimes it happens, you go to a place, I think in Dubai they do this, just give devotees cash, everybody gets an envelope, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a fine line to actually, in your own consciousness, to give a donation as a gesture of seva to the devotees, or to think, you know, I'm charitable.
Of course.
Something in return.
Of course, because the point is piety is simply a transformation of the natural activities and attitudes of devotion, of bhakti. That's the whole thing. It's the natural qualities of bhakti. When they're directed at Krishna, then it's bhakti. But when those same activities are not directed at Krishna, they're directed for one's own benefit, it's called in the material world piety.
Right.
So it's already been transformed.
Right.
So that's why the piety, you find that the activities that are being done by the devotees, the recommended, you know, activities to nourish bhakti, then those are would also be counted within the you would see them within the realm of the pious activities, but they're being performed because of the bhakti, not because of the material benefit that you get. And so that is if that's understood, then your devotion goes very comfortably. But if you think that without these qualities, you can't perform bhakti, then one has made a grave mistake, because bhakti is the source of piety. But if you say, unless you're pious, you can't be a devotee. Or you can't, you know, Krishna won't accept your service, you know, or Krishna won't drink the milk of these cows. It's kind of like, why wouldn't he? They're his cows. That's like saying, oh, your son, you know, comes back from school and he was bullied at school. Oh, I'm not dealing with a child that's been bullied. You know, I don't agree with bullying. Right? Does that make any sense? But it goes on, because there's the illusion that piety is the basis of bhakti. That's why it's considered, you know, one of the offenses. Yes. Is to think that the holy name is dependent on that. I've heard people say, is that, oh, but unless we're good and all this and that, probably Krishna's not going to accept our devotion. You know, unless the community and we all have love, Krishna's not going to accept. But they're taking it from that side. It's based on a devotional point. But unfortunately, like you said, the fine, was it red line or blue line?
Yeah, fine line.
Oh, fine.
It could be any color.
The principle of bhakti is it's unconditional. The principle
yes.
of piety is...
It's conditional?
It's conditional.
yes.
I'm thinking, as a second example, Prataparudra. You know, because he was so eager to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he took it upon himself to give facilities, he says, make sure all the facilities, you know, food, accommodation,
yes.
make sure everything is there for them.
Yes.
Then when Lord Chaitanya started traveling, he wanted to have stations everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he built things everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
As a gesture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not that he wanted something in return.
Yes, yes.
He was already on the platform of seva.
Yes. Yes, so that's theirs. That's why the devotees are analyzing their own devotional service. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends that that's done on a regular basis, that you're analyzing. Either you just naturally then, now and again, as it comes up, are analyzing, or he mentions that, like, he gives an example, like on Ekadasi, then you can analyze and see, you know, how the devotion is going, how that, or, you know, maybe just some kind of junctions of activities or mentalities or situations, or and to see, because that's very important, and you can reflect back, you know. So anything, even if it goes way back, it doesn't matter. It's that you want to make sure that there's nothing there, there's no seeds. That's the whole point, is to see the seeds have been either soaked in the nectar of devotional service so they can't sprout, or, you know, in the knowledge and renunciation they've been dry roasted. You know, something, you got to get rid of the seeds, because all reactions, all things are coming from seeds. You know, we look at it, we're worried about the Prarabdha karma. No, but that's going to come, whatever is going to come. It's the seed, because the Prarabdha karma is done. It's just a matter of when you get it.
Mm.
You know, because it'll take that Bhutaycha and Phulan Mukha and then Prarabdha. But Bija, that's the thing you can, that it's not there now, it's in a seed form. You don't want them to sprout. You know, and when you do an activity, the seed for that activity is created again. It means you do something you like, pious or impious, a seed for that. So if you do something pious, a pious seed is created. If you do something impious, an impious seed is created.
When you say activities, can it also be a thought? Because thought is a product of desire.
Yeah, means that'll contain. In this age, it won't create a direct reaction. It won't start the process, but
unless you cultivate it all the time.
Yeah, no. If you cultivate it, then at some point you'll do.
Right.
But what we're saying is here is that you know, it's like one of my favorite back in the 70s favorite fantasies was, you know, the taxi wallahs always harass you over everything, whatever it is. You know, so they're fighting over 10 paise and that. So it was always the fantasy, is as I got out of the taxi at the Calcutta temple, you know, and closed the door, then as they started to drive off, the street would open up and they'd fall in. It never happened. But.
Not yet.
Though I was very pleased in Delhi once. It was in Connaught Circus, and there was, you know, I think it was at the first circle. No, second circle. At, you know, not Junpat, the one that's over where Mahan Singh Palace?
Imperial Street.
Whatever, yeah, the next one, and that goes down. And at that junction, something had happened. They were doing some work there, you know, all the way down. I think maybe the metro or something.
Yeah.
And as I walked by one day, there was a taxi down there. The guy just drove right off into, you know, the hole was like this deep, you know. So that was satisfying. But otherwise, then. So you don't get a reaction for that. But it doesn't mean it's not contaminating. Because otherwise, what's there? What's causing that? Then that means an attachment to what do you call it? Justice.
Right.
You know, and then from justice is retribution. And so that has to be given up. So that's what we see when Prabhupada's talking about Prahlad Maharaj. She doesn't have that. So it's not that, yeah, my dad's a rat bag and all that. It's just like, you know, it's unfortunate. So, but, you know, he asked the Sringadev to save him. Like that. So that's that's the Vaishnav position. That's the Vaishnav. Hmm? Yes. So those seeds, one has to see as it's there. That's why it's confusing, because we just see it, there's seed, you know, sprout, you know, tree ready to give fruit, and then the fruit itself. And we only see that line. But the point is when you do so, that's why it says you do something, then it creates a seed. And it also says you sprout. So, because the two happen at once. The seed that's there sprouts and it produces another seed. Because anything you do, you want to do it again. So that's why if you're always doing something devotional, then it creates more and more desires to do devotional. You do pious, it wants to do pious. You do impious, you want to do impious. So only the devotional will get rid of the piety and impiety.
It's interesting because a few years ago during a very hot summer in Beijing.
Okay.
I mean, it was so hot, it was just in the apartment, I was just wearing my gumshoe every day.
Okay.
And I tell my wife, I said, you know, I could live with a gumshoe on every day of my life. And we're here, because here I'm always wearing gumshoe. Mm-hmm. All you were doing when I come here. Mm-hmm. So I was telling you, I said, when I told you this a few years ago, I said, oh, you like wearing gumshoe? Noted. I'm going to make you wear gumshoe for 2 years in Bible.
Yeah?
If that's your desire, I can arrange.
Get rid of everything, just a stack of gumshoes.
You got to be careful what you wish for.
Yes, you have to be careful. Verses 151. So, but in that, you also have to see is that, because we tend to look at the sinful side, because in, you know, the contemporary, it means, well, in that material environment, then religion is performed to get the pious benefit. You know, so therefore going to the heaven and all these kind of things are considered, that is the proper result of religion. But that's only one of them. It keeps you here. Then impiety will keep you here. But bhakti will take you out of here. You know, you won't come back. Like Mataji mentioned, some years back that we were discussing that even in the Judaic understanding is that you go to heaven and that you also come back to continue enjoying here. You know, and then you can go there again and it's back and forth. So it's kind of like become clouded, the aspect of karma. So it's you know, so... Jaimini's point. Just Jaimini without the demigods.
Yeah.
One of these
is Jaimini.
Yeah, one of these is Jaimini.
Yeah, because it's all about karma.
Yeah. So
Abrahamic, the old karma.
Yeah, it's not. So it's not about. Yeah, it's just, you know, whether there are green embroidered couches or not, you know, depending
it's
upon.
Technical German Hebrew.
Oh, okay. And that's the one thing is that the only thing I heard on the Christian side is, you know, cuddly talking lions that your daughter can, you know, cuddle with.
Yeah,
but I'm saying that they don't talk about what it's like there. They only talk about, you know, the whole trip it is for Judgment Day and, you know, going this way and going that way and
that's
then
true.
You walk around and you go in and, you know, or Peter's there and goes through the... Yeah, but they don't talk about what's inside.
No, never.
Because I think they limit for your imagination because everyone is different, so...
Oh, okay.
Okay. Party and password. If it doesn't match, you don't get in.
Uh-huh. And that's what... That's what Peter's for, right? He checks the password.
So he's the computer.
He's the customs.
Yeah, he's the customs. Yeah. So you have that. But what I'm saying is that this, because we're conditioned to piety is good. But the point is you have to give up attachment to pious and impious. You have to give up both. Because both are an attachment. So that's why you see it can bleed through when devotees are talking about being good, being nice, being friendly, the community spirit and the support. Much of the time that's not coming from the recommendations of Vaishnava etiquette and practices that we see. It's coming from their attachment to piety. Is that... You know, if you see there, so it's, and it's not necessarily based on religion. You know, if they're coming from an Orthodox background or something like that, it might have some connection with that. But if they're not, it's generally coming from the social, political platform.
Can piety be directly or indirectly related to fear? Fear based on ignorance. Ignorance means no knowledge. Therefore, you're in fear. Therefore, you want to do pious activity just in case.
That's there, but it's still, it's more about the, so the fear will be about the safety.
Yes.
And so therefore you want gain. But the two go together. Gain and safety are just another features of envy and attachment. You know, or fear and anger. It's the same two positions. It's just a matter of what are the different qualities that function in those two categories. So the original sin of, you know, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, that comes down as gain and safety. That also is fear and attachment, envy and attachment. You know, like that. It's the same thing, just different situations, the different qualities come up. So there's kind of like a hierarchy how qualities work. Like we saw, Rupa Goswami was talking about some of those. Ganga was mentioning the Shanchari Babas, and so then doubt would come up that what about these qualities? And he would point out that in this quality here, the natural progression is from that you'll get this. So if you have this, you don't have to worry about that. It's like if I give you rice, I don't have to ask if there's something going with it. You know, does that make sense? You know, it just comes along with it. So they're just further ways of entanglement. And so for different people, they'll focus on one thing, someone else will focus on another, just like on rules. The sadhana, some focus on that performing their duties and doing the thing, and someone else focuses on not doing anything wrong, not breaking any rule. Someone's about following the rules, someone's about not breaking any rules. They both accomplish the same thing. Because if you don't break a rule, you're following the rule. And if you're following the rule, you're not breaking the rule. But it's a matter of where the focus is. Like you see, some are always more encouraging. Some are, oh, no, can't do this, can't do that. It has a little bit more. It's a slightly different mood. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have the, you know, those cliches of the person who is, you know, always going in and encouraging and always overly kind of like pleasantly supportive and inspired, that kind of religious mood and all that, you know, or the person who's, you know, walks around with those black cards and repent, the end is nigh, and you know, all that kind of stuff, you know. So it is, but they're both nicely situated in their practice and things like that. The one focuses on the negative, one on the positive. Those are extremes. So it just be you don't want to break this, but you want to do this. So it's a matter of the jnani, you know, in the pious persons means that they feel the obligation and gratefulness to serve God, because God is taking care of doing so what they want to serve. So that's there now. But you have the association of the pure devotees, then you don't want anything in return for that service, that obligation. That then you move to the Madhyama platform. Right? So the jnani is not necessarily, it doesn't mean he's a scholar. That's more the jigyasu. He may be scholarly, but he may not be. He knows God and knows what he does, and so therefore is grateful for that and wants to reciprocate that by performing his duties. He has that sense of obligation. Does that make sense? So that has obligation. While the other three, they're actually they want something in return. So that's why they're lower.
Yeah.
And the jnani is the highest of those four. But still, the jnani is still the Kanista platform. But the other three, because of association of devotees, as the desires are fulfilled and they're associated with devotees, they may give that up and then come to that Madhyama platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or come to that Padmajnani and do their duties and then come to Madhurya like this. So that's the whole point. Association is the dynamic aspect that makes the switch. So if there's anything wrong in someone's life, you see, Srila Prabhupada, the first thing was association. Someone was having problem, then he'd make an arrangement for good association, stable association. That was, because that's the only solution. Now it's ban you from this and that. No, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's the Catholics and the Pradis here, you know. It's like, you know, it's not a devotion, because we've never seen anyone satisfied, because prayaschitta is supposed to reform you, right? But is anybody pleased when someone's finished their term of prayaschitta? If we make it up, is anyone pleased? No, never. It's eternal damnation. So it's not a solution. It's just you're dealing with their sense of justice and their anger and their issues and stuff like that. And it's just a way to express. But you see, as if it's about you're focusing on association, then you go like the same. When Prabhupada's here, you take people with him. They come with him, they travel with him, and things like that. When they got back on their feet, they go back to their service. Then, you know, for some years after, like in the 80s and stuff like that, I mean, even earlier, he would also be going on earlier. One major thing was to go on, Padyatra. Because you're just doing Harinam all day, you're walking, going to holy places, a simple life, you're away from anything. It means whatever you're into Maya in the West, it's not there. You know, so and you're in good association, you know, life is simple. And you see people would come out, and people came back from that. Everyone's satisfied. Like that. So that's the whole thing, is that because it's about advancing in Krishna consciousness, that's by association and involvement in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, the only actual, you know, prayaschitta is bhakti. There isn't anything else. And if you try some other things, you know, for 2 years, you can't do this, or like that, no one's satisfied after 2 years. If after 2 years everybody's happy, great. But that meant, you know, it worked. Because the point is they're doing it to satisfy the public. But the public's not satisfied. You know, so therefore it didn't work. It didn't benefit the person. Not the thing itself by your arrangement. It may have by they themselves found association or became contemplative, so they got benefit in that way by Krishna's grace. And the public is not satisfied that, you know, they're purified. And so therefore it was a complete waste of, you know, everyone's time. You know, it doesn't work, though we completely can do it again and again because of our attachment to this concept that piety is good and impiety is bad. But no, bhakti is good, piety and impiety are bad. But of the two, impiety can be engaged in bhakti. But it's connection to bhakti that makes the piety of value, not that it has a value on its own.
Yes.
You know, so that's when you're saying the balance becomes easier when you look at it from actual platform of piety. That's what the 11th canto talks about. So, okay. With this new mood, are you going to fall asleep? Or?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of thoughts running in my mind, but what Prabhu has mentioned is that it's a completely, you know, Christian idea.
Yes.
And
or at least minimum Abrahamic, but it's mainly the ones who push it the most is Christian. Though I have seen those who are coming from other backgrounds, they can get into the same thing because it's the same background, and when you're dealing with religion, you have the same problem. In India, it's the same thing. I've seen people from Brahmin families; they have the same problems.
Yeah, because God-fearing person consider the good.
Yes, yes.
And I agree, fear stimulates religiosity, but it's not about that, because if we read, you know, creation, the primary creation, the first emotion, which was really strong emotion, the Brahma, the first created being experienced. That was fear. He started to search for God out of fear, but he couldn't find him. He was searching for 100 years in the car without the ocean, and he wasn't there because it's revelation. So we don't follow that path, but just by habit, we wanna, you know, bring it in,
yes,
and say, well, it's part of the tradition, but it's not.
It's not
part of a Vaishnava tradition. But people try to bring it, and then, as you mentioned, the masses, they agree. Everybody thinks, yeah, it is, but it's not.
I mean, it's one of the four pious persons is fear. Like that, one is knowledge, and one is material facility. So you do have it. So as a very beginning position, it's all right if that becomes the impetus. Whatever will bring you closer to the Lord and put you on the path is fine. But once you get on the path, then you have to advance, like we were discussing in the morning. You have to give up those lower steps and step up to the higher. Can't be, oh, this is comfortable and all that, and then try to adjust everything else to match that. Because yes, you'll be comfortable, but the problem is you'll be comfortable here. You won't go there because no one there will be comfortable with your mentality. You know, that's the thing. Not that fear isn't one of the qualities that's there, you know, in the various elements of rasa. You know, it's one of the sanchris and like that. But it's not the main cause of something. It's not the udipan. It's not that. It just comes up in the flavor. It's like a spice, you know.
Yeah. Another point I was thinking, when this story continues, then the renunciation of Raghunath Das increases step by step. So this will show also how he doesn't want to think that I'm charitable, I'm feeding Mahaprabhu, I'm doing this, I'm organizing this and that. So it is included.
His whole process.
So it will show just step by step. For us, not for him. He was really renounced right from the beginning. But then slowly it unfolds. Now how to get rid of this mentality. So it is there. And also that Dhinadapi Sunishinavras will be introduced by Mahaprabhu to Raghunath Das. So for many devotees, the cause and effect in that verse is in a reverse order. They think that the first part of the verse produces the Kirtaniya Sadahari, but it's not.
It's the Kirtaniya Sadahari produces.
Yeah, but that concept, you have to know, like we discussed previously, you have to know Satkaryavat, which straightens everything, because it's really logical and it's very clear. But if people don't understand that principle, they think, oh yeah, humble, that will produce changing, pure changing, or continuous change, but it's not. It's a byproduct of changing. That we become humble, and then we become tolerant, and then we give respect, and then we don't demand any respect. So this, it's like you mentioned, it's very subtle, actually. It's very subtle.
So it's just, if it's appreciated, the main point is as if that aspect of pure devotion, as you know, Lord Chaitanya says, prema pumartu mahan. And then you have Rupa Goswami's then definition of pure devotion service. These two things are in the forefront. Then everything else can be seen in that context. And then how useful it is for prema, that's what's... The acharyas have given us elements of sadhana that are useful for that. And so those things can't be dropped. So when difficulty may come up is that... When we say is, oh, you know, it's all the rules and regulations, it's not about that, it's about, you know, this, and then the devotee on the spontaneous platform follows, but only those things that are useful and all that. So what's not necessarily understood is the volume of rules that are there. And the acharyas have already given us those practices that rag bhaktas follow. They've already stripped away everything else. And so we take it that, you know, it's like from this much rules, they've cut it down to these ones work. And so we take it, oh, these are all the rules, so many rules, because they become from the background that there's no rules other than when you get toast and you generally put butter on it. You know, then there's, and even that's up for discussion. You know, so. And so then they want to cut it down. But but you see in the cutting down, it's the basis is breaking authority. You become the authority of which is right and which is wrong, not that is coming down from Parampara. And so you break authority, it's what you feel, so it becomes whimsical. So it's exactly, but what you do, and you establish your own rules, so then that Niyamagraha means I establish my own rules. Means what he mentioned there was I'm stuck to the rules. He's looking at the monomoy thing. You stick to the rules and then the other ones you give up. But here is that the rules generally tend to be pranamoy. Or even nowadays in the modern political thing it's becoming anamoy. You know, like that. It may have been anamoy all along, just it's becoming more obvious. You know, it's like a what do you call it? Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that many of these modern or most contemporary philosophers, then they're straight up front atheists. But he basically points out that the six schools, the Vedic schools, they keep it hidden. They're still the atheists, because atheism can also extend to the point you don't believe in that the Lord, you know, has this eternal Swarup. And so that technically is because atheism means it's against theism. He has this eternal Swarup. And so then, if you're not appreciating that, then it's not actually theistic. But if at least if it's in pursuance of theism or supportive of, then it's encouraged. But it can't be taken as it's the actual standard. So then, as you were mentioning before, is that the aspect of fear and religion, that's the beginning stage of the Vaishnav thing. But as you said, that's all the farther they get, and they take it that that's the pinnacle. You know, rather than going up. And so then what you'll see within that, that some will be more scholarly, some will be more feel the obligation to perform their duties. But that's kind of more personal. It's not the general discussion. You know, just like for us, you may have people that have so many things, but the general discussion is pure devotional service. So then that will actually take you beyond all these conditioned states. While the other, if it's just on fear, it won't take you beyond that. It will make you more pious and all that, but it won't actually bring about the Vaishnava theology or the monotheism won't mature into pure bhakti. Because technically, the Abrahamic religions, that they're monotheistic, so they're actually Vaishnavas. But the problem is that the neophyte standard of fear or, you know, going for, how you say, material benefits is the prominent element. So there's no discussion about moving from that to Madhyama, then that to Uttama, and that to Prema.
I'll make my point again that this element of fear, especially relating to the Abrahamic religion, it's the lack of knowledge. They always fear God because they don't know God.
That's there.
So they can't move forward one inch. They just keep praying and praying and praying. They never ask, you know, I mean, what does he look like? Where does he live?
But at the same time, they don't care, because as long as he fulfills their desires, that's good enough. See, that's the whole thing, is that it's both, because if they want, then Krishna will arrange. Krishna's Kaviraj talks about that in the Adi Lila, that Krishna, being in the heart, sees the mentality, and if you are interested to know who God is, he'll put you in contact with the pure devotees.
Right.
So therefore, then those persons interested in this thing that did want to know, they came in contact.
That's why Prabhupada attracted so many Jews.
Yeah, that's why he said he's the Jewish guru. Juvisi, yes. Yeah.
I mean, how many?
Yeah.
But most of them, if you look, sometimes I think of the names, most of the devotees who joined Prabhupada in the early days came from a Jewish background where the family couldn't care less about religion. They were like liberal, you know.
Yeah, TKG said his parents were atheists. Because the point is, as long as you follow the Jewish culture as an identity, then you're Jewish. Whether you believe in God or not, that's a finer point. Yeah, bonus. You know, unless you're dealing, I'm sure the Orthodox and the Hasids would disagree with that, but I think when you're dealing reform and stuff.
Then you have a few like Basu Ghosh and Korma, they always come up with the same Jewish prayers every time they see you. You know, something they learned when they were a kid, you know?
Yeah. Whatever that you can be fine, absolutely fine if you follow the religion and don't believe in God from those religious
beliefs. Oh, okay, they also, yeah. Because at least then the piety is there, you're not displeasing God by your activity.
Because he was arguing with me that what I'm doing is not good. I said, I'm Jewish, I cannot be anybody else. He said, no, that's not true. You have to follow the Jewish religion. I said, but I believe in God. He said, that's a bonus.
Yeah, Judaism is very, very, how you say, it's very bodily conscious.
Yeah, not very bodily conscious.
It's all about blood. If it's not there, they won't even talk to you.
Yeah.
Because Goy is Goy. He doesn't have any brain to understand it. He doesn't have enough piety. And that's it.
Yeah.
So on that level, we speak like that. Pulo Paksha.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing that turned me off as I grew up. I got Jewish education. My father used to read and read and read, take us to the synagogue, and I would just follow everything. I'm thinking, I'm going nowhere with you. I still don't know who's God.
But then you wanted to know, so then you bumped into the devotees.
Bumped into the devotees. Boom, that's it, I know.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah. Because that's the point, is they're not interested to know. Anybody who is will move forward. Because the point is it's God's place. And God is, as Paramatma is in everyone's heart. And so then anybody who's actually looking for him, then do it. But if you're only looking for the piety, then as much as you want, that much you go forward. So whatever piety is there, you'll get a benefit for that. But whatever impiety is there, because how much is made up? You know, because you're talking about it's very bodily conscious. And it's seemingly very ritualistic.
Yes.
But this is the Pharisees. The Sadducees were the smartest.
Right.
And that's been removed. So what you see now is that's always going to be is whatever position you take, you'll always get those who are more ritualistic and those who are trying to be more accommodating. Then if you get rid of this, then that group will be two groups.
You know,
it's just like now you see the political, when the left gets too wild and where no one can tolerate, then you start hearing about, the center left or, the conservative left, like that. They're trying to pull it back because it's just going too out there.
Yeah.
So it always happens. Or if someone gets too, much on the conservative like that, then they'll talk about, we have to be more accommodating. But they're still within that group. So you're always, that's the thing, is that when we started the conversation, is that the material world does not have a reconciling potency. Only the spiritual has that. So therefore, in the spiritual world, all the seeming contradictions are reconciled because everything comes from Krishna. So of course they're all there.
Because it's absolute.
It's absolute. But on the material point, the duality, it's a duality.
It's relative.
Yeah, it's relative. So, Einstein was right. On the material level. Everything is related to something else. Like that. But then you have the absolute, like I noticed, like we were doing in English on the grammar, and you have all the different parts of speech and trying to define them. And we were using a university level, in, you know, book to define them. Each one is defined off the other one. You know, noun and verb, pretty much they can say. When I was a kid, it was person, place, or thing was a noun. Now they add more to that. You know.
Hmm?
I don't know. I can't remember. It was one of those things I couldn't relate to it, but someone told me is that it has more definition. Now, and verb means the active thing. But everything else, one is defined with that, by this, by this, by this, and eventually it comes around. But then I noticed in Sanskrit, no, everything is so clearly defined because everything goes back to the verb. The verb is the central thing. The action is what you're trying to do. And that is the situation. So this is a personification of a verb. Means, in other words, table means it holds off the floor. So the verb actually is to hold up. And the table does that. So everything can be very clearly, as Jiva Goswami points out, the Sanskrit and the letters come from Narayan. Therefore, from there you can get it can be reconciled if you connect it back to the Lord. And if you don't, then yeah, you can get distracted. So So that's the difficulty, is that the material energy doesn't have that potency because people are here for that duality, right? Because they're going to have, you know, you have the action and you have the situation. Right? Because in the spiritual world, you have Krishna's desire, you have the action, you have the situation. In other words, his desire is fulfilled by certain actions, you know, done it with a certain attitudes in certain situations. So now you remove God from the equation, you only have the actions and the situations. So how do you define what it means? It means mechanically, by observation, you can see this action goes with this situation. Right? You know, it means you can only make hay when the sun shines, right? You can't make it when it's raining. So, you know, so it means just there's obvious things. That's what science is, observing and like this. But what the problem comes up is, where's the icha, where's the desire? And so if you have religious society, then it's gods. You know, you have something that has that, and you have, you know, more the humanistic kind of element, then, you know, God's given us this to do something with, and so that you're not breaking any laws of God, we make our own laws. Like that. And then you get rid of that religion, and it's just what's good for all of us to work together and all that, and so some are looking more for the justice, some are looking more for the economics, you know. Like that, you know, some are looking at, you know, just the nice social interactions, and depending on that, but ultimately all that's for sense gratification. So then when people see things, then they can only see two things: what situation, what action. And most people don't see that. The ones that are successful or the organized things, they're the ones that see those two. Otherwise, everybody else, it's only because if you don't have money, you don't eat, therefore they work. Otherwise, they wouldn't. Right? So then, but what's not took into consideration is, where's the desire? So that's the point, is you're going to work because you want money. The businessman, he wants money. You work for him, he gets money. So that you work for him, he gives you some money. But his ideas give you as less as possible, and your idea, he should give you as much as possible, and therefore they fight. So there's always going to be the duality, because they can't define the things properly. So that's why you'll see is on the material platform, no matter how well thought out it is, how this, it's still be faulty. Still. And only on the spiritual platform. So if when devotees are looking for these things that they see contradictions, the only way is through pure devotion. Then Krishna reveals. You know, Narad Muni is the example of one who can reconcile all these differences. But he is the incarnation of bhakti. Right? You know, he's as the Shakti of Aish, then he's in the category of bhakti. And so he can reconcile all those. So that's the thing. So only with devotion can that be done.
That becomes the problem, is that if we're trying to, through logic, through social things, through political and all that, it'll never, you can't. It means this whole political correct thing has been discussed since 94 it was introduced.
Political correctness?
Yeah, 94, like it became official, like that. And still, you know, it doesn't solve anything.
No, people have to use it.
Yeah, it makes them feel good, like they're pious, like they're a good person. But at the same time, who's defining? But what, it's being taken that it's the correctness. It's the correct thing to do. That's what they take. But it's a euphemism. Political correctness means it's politics that just is not so grating. But it's pure politics. Now, the fun part is those who are professional politicians, means that are actually effective in the field, they only use it because it politically works. It's not a lifestyle. So those who take it as a philosophy and lifestyle, then it's not. And then you're a Vaishnava and you use it, how will it benefit you? It's pranamoy on a good day. And now as more and more it gets into these more, you know, liberal kind of things, it gets more and more anamoy, more and more self-centered, more and more aggressive towards others, but being presenting it as if it's about everybody. As long as everybody's doing what I say, everybody's included. But if you're not doing what I say, you're in trouble. You know? So these things can't work. But because of attachments, either for the religious, political, social, you know, what is it, distinction, adoration, no, it's the other one, society, friendship, and love, then they'll be bewildered. So unless it's seen that, no, only pure devotional service can reconcile all these things, they can go on talking forever. Like that. So, you know, that's the point. Where is it going to go?
Yeah, in the 11th canto, Krishna mentions that there are three paths, useful paths, the karma, jnana, and bhakti.
Right.
So, in this kind of a discussion, the difficulty becomes is that being an outcast, we didn't go the slow path.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't go through karma,
mm-hmm.
which actually, according to the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, teaches us, you know, many things, but the main is regularity,
mm-hmm.
and cleanliness.
Mm-hmm.
So, since we didn't go through that, we don't have much of those
mm-hmm.
qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Then, from being regular and clean, you shift to the jnana.
Mm-hmm.
And then jnana, then again, it teaches, you know, so many things, but the main is renunciation.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't learn that
mm-hmm.
from jnana. We were thrown into the path of bhakti,
mm-hmm.
and now we are being prepared.
Mm-hmm.
But then each ingredient, because we don't have the purva samskaras, we fight with one another, as you explained.
Yes.
Because our purva samskaras are not based on karma or jnana. It's a conglomerate of all kind of
vikarma.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say, garbage.
Yeah, that'd work.
So this become this and this issue and that issue, and we can distinguish what's the principle, what's the detail,
mm-hmm.
and then the whole. Otherwise, it's all explained. It's all explained, you know, very, very properly in the 11th canto.
Mm-hmm.
Or even as a basic in Bhagavad Gita,
yeah.
in the six chapters of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
You know, six and the last six.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we're given the highest process,
mm-hmm.
and Adhikar is the Mahaprabhu's mercy and the Guru's mercy.
Yes, yes.
But for karma and jnana, we don't have an Adhikar. So discussing those, because if we discuss bhakti, pure bhakti, it's very straightforward.
Yeah.
But discussing issues, like you explained, we can't reconcile those because we don't have piety for that.
Yeah, but at the same time is, therefore, only bhakti, only the holy name, is the holy name that will take you forward. And the Pancharatrik system, because Prabhupada gave us the Pancharatrik lifestyle. Before, you know, the 60s, then it was basically a Bhagavat process, yeah, purely. And very minimal, you know, need of regulation, because they go out on Harinam all day, you know, and this and that. And, you know, Prabhupada was discussed, so hearing and chanting was the main thing they were doing. But in I think, 1970, then Prabhupada established the Pancharatrik very, very clearly. And so, therefore, the lifestyle with the Mangalarti, getting up, the chanting, you know, so the whole morning program does all the activities of Pancharatra. We complete all the activities of Pancharatra, basically, you know, through breakfast.
Yeah.
Then the only thing left that is, you know, major would be performing your particular service for the deity. And that would be the other parts of the day. Otherwise, and the evening program is a reflection of the morning program. So, and it's so well constructed that other sampradayas do not have that well of a constructed thing, but we take it as it's just so simple and everybody else has the far out thing. No. If you actually study, no one else has a program that we have that has all the recommended things all within that short means from, you know, 4:30 in the morning till 9:30. You've done everything. You know, like that. It's like the Shris, and when do they worship Tulsi? You know. Yeah, I'm just saying. They will, but it's not like what we do.
No.
And probably even give twice a day.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you had the one, you know, Mangalarti ended with that, then the evening, you did Tulsi Arti, then the evening Arti.
Yeah.
You know.
What about those the same? Right?
They do. Because they have a similar program, but ours is even a little bit better. Like they don't have going for Charinamrita, Srikamandali, sometimes they do some mutts. At Mangalartik, when they sing the final song or stuff like that, they go around the deities sometimes like that. But it's But it's temple to temple, and some do, some don't.
They don't have the guru puja.
They don't have that. So that's what I'm saying. Ours really has every. Not that they're not all the elements aren't there in all the sampradayas. They must be. But how regulated and how like that, and then the emphasis on the time and the purity, that's what Pancharatra does. So even if we didn't get it from the Vedic, we get it from the Pancharatrik. And that doesn't require the conditioned qualification. The Vedic requires a conditioned qualification. Because technically dwijas will tend to follow these more, but specifically, you know, Brahmins. Like that. Kshatriyas also tend to, but you see it goes family to family. All Brahmins will. Some is higher, some it's good to super excellent. Kshatriyas generally will be there, but you know, there can be a little things. Vaishyas you find family to family may be there more or less. I've heard of like these like Shud and other really high grade like Calcutta aristocracy. Then the cleanliness standards they have are basically the same as like high grade Brahmins. Like that, because you never know that they didn't come from that kind of background, as we saw about the Kayasthas.
Yeah.
You know, that they may have been Brahmin background. Like, remember once somebody was a musician, it was way back, this would have been, I think, in the 40s or something, 40s or 50s or something. He was at Varanasi for, you know, they had that music program for Navaratri. They do a big Drupad, you know, it's a big thing. It's been going on for a long time. So a big festival program there. And this person, you know, he was down at Dashrameda Ghat to take a bath. And then he saw in the distance this Brahmin coming, you know, dressed as a Brahmin coming down and all that. When he got close, he recognized that it was Aluddin Khan, who's, you know, Ravi Shankar's music teacher, Muslims. And so he asked him, why are you coming to us to take bath? It's a Ekadasi today. And he says, in our family, we always take bath on Ekadasi. So, in other words, they were Brahmins before that, you know, they were into that, they knew music, and so they just went into that because it's, you know, it's either you. It's, well, yeah, the choice is pretty. Aurangzeb, you know, made it, you know, very, very straightforward choice.
Easy choice.
Yeah, easy choice. Easy choice. Like that. And so, you know, they would do. Like that, or you saw in, I think I saw like 20 years ago, they came across this family in think they were in Arizona. Arizona, maybe even New Mexico. You know, it's kind of like, it's there in America, but they're kind of out of the way. At least at that time. Now it's become very popular. But they were a Jewish family that no one knew they were Jewish. And that was since the Spanish Inquisition. They somehow or another got out of there at that time, and whenever it was the early settlers into America, they got over and went there, because you couldn't be Jewish, you couldn't be this, you couldn't be that, you know, because the Christians were pretty crazy then. I can think, other than Rhode Island, in the other states, or some of the states, it was punishable by death if you were not the religion of that state.
State, yeah.
You know, so Rhode Island, it was a little dinky place. It would allow, you could be any denomination. But let's say, you know, like another one, like Philadelphia, if you weren't this religion, you could be killed. If they found out, they'd kill you. And they left Europe because of religious persecution. Hello. You know, so whatever. So they got there, they were down there, and they just stayed out of the way because there's no one there. You go to California, it's too busy. You know, you go to the other places, it's too busy. Up north, that place is out of the way, no one thinks about it. So they've been practicing underground for, you know, hundreds of years like this, and they just bumped into them, you know. So you do get that, you know, you stay out of the way. But the point is that what is the point? Where were we?
The Brahmanas and the Muslims and the purity and the Pancharatra.
Yes, okay. So the Pancharatra is that aspect of the purity and all that. If you don't have that nature in the family, by conditioning, through Pancharatra you can get it. Because when you take initiation, then it says that, like bell metal, it turns into gold. By alchemy you can turn it into gold. So then you qualify. That's why devotees, they're above 16 years old, they can get Upanayana, the Brahma Gayatri, because of Pancharatra. Otherwise, by Vedic standards, once you're 16, if you turn 16 and you don't have Brahma Gayatri, you're unqualified to get it ever. You know, next life you can get it, but not this life. So it's by Pancharatra. So then Prabhupada established that. So he had the Bhagavad was the strong. Then he brought in that because people weren't reading, they weren't regular, things like that. It's like only Satsarup, because he was the editor and dealing with BBT, he actually knew how to deal with the Mayavad that was being preached. And so then Prabhupada noted that, and that, you know, no one else knew. And so therefore he made the regular classes morning. Otherwise, the books were there, devotees would read, and the time when they'd be there, they'd chant their rounds, read, you know, rest a bit, and then go out on Harinam all day. And so you do have the thing that you can get it from there, but then you have to take it seriously. But then if you say it's for neophytes, why? Because neophytes need to be regulated and purified. Then they can come to the standard of being stable in devotional service, because they have faith that only devotional service is the process, has any value. All of the processes are seen in context of bhakti. That's nishtha. That's the madhyama. But it'll be taken, oh, is that all? We don't need. So then it's always a management or something else that's more high. But then, okay, are you regulated? It was just like, was TKG regulated?
Yes.
Yeah, was Bhavananda regulated? Very. Extremely. And so, they were managers, but their sadhana was like, you know, always the same, year after year, decade after decade, just didn't change. But the others who it's like, you know, the whole morning you're on the phone and, you know, this and that out of the meetings and that. When you chant, when you do these things, they get it done. You know, they are regular. In other words, over a day they'll get 16 rounds done. But it's not like it has the regular like this. And so then how is it going to create the regularity and the purity?
Yogeshwar Prabhu did some research about Prabhupada's achievement, and he said, I'm just astounded to see that you can go anywhere in the world and you can attend a morning and an evening program.
Mm-hmm.
He said, how Prabhupada managed to establish that is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere in the world, same time, everyone does the same thing,
mm-hmm,
every day.
Yeah. Before it was, you went from one tummy to another. As you're traveling on the road, you know, you're out there and it's crazy out there. And as soon as you get to the temple, you think, I'm home. Yeah. It didn't matter. It was you had this temple, that, because it was exactly the same thing. Yeah. They even smelled the same in those days.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
The ghee and the incense.
Yeah, the ghee and the spiritual sky incense. Yes, I guess that was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like that. And so.
I mean, it's just amazing, actually.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is therefore, since we aren't qualified, means, because see, is the Vedic works on humans. Means, you know, means Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras. So if you're Panchavarna, it's not going to work. So therefore, the Pancharatra, then that will give you a new birth, that whatever is needed from there, you use. Because mostly our main lifestyle is Pancharatric and Bhagavad. You know, the goal is Bhagavad, that's the main drive. Then the Pancharatra gives kind of like the structure like that, and then the Vedic, where it's useful, then it's given. So in that way, then it can work, and in one lifeline you can go back to Godhead. Because otherwise, by the Vedic, that's hundreds, thousands, like that, you know. So, I mean, certainly like we said, you know, probably said Ravi Shankar was playing sitar for 1,000 lifetimes, you know, so... You know, you want to spend your, is that how you want to go? And it's pretty slow, you know. Yeah. Huh? Hmm? But that's my point, is that it's, you do these things for thousands and thousands. That's why it mentions about the yogis drilling the breath for millions of lifetimes. Yeah, exactly. So that means there are yogis that are doing like that, life after life, and they're getting a little bit better. But they'll never reach the Lord. So that's why then the bhakti is the only path. So that's why, and it's universal because of Krishna consciousness, so therefore anybody can take part. So that's the universalness. And so therefore you have to have a universalness that works for the soul. And you have the simplicity that everybody can do it. Because you see the program, it was established, like you said, everywhere. And so this idea is, oh, we're Westerners, we can't do that. That's mundane upadis. That's not spiritual. It's not a spiritual thought. It's not a spiritual philosophy. It's just a particular attachment. And that, you know, parts of the process, you don't agree with that, so you say it's not universal, when it is. You're the one that can't work in the universal.
And it's whether you have a painting of Panchatattva or you have three hours. It's the same.
Yeah. Like that. It's the same program. Even if you go to someone's house and they're living where there's no temple, then they'll have that program themselves. And, you know, and it's ready, the offering, and, you know, so like that. And still see the same, so you go bow down, ring the bell, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a perfect program. Like that. Then you want to refine and develop some of it, that's there, but you have to keep the core. It's just like you have an offering. You have those prayers Prabhupada gave. Now if you want to add to that, you know, Padya Marga Machmaniyam and Tumbulam and all these things, you add it, but you keep this. But most of the time, oh, that's thrown out, we do it. No, keep that. You add these things around it. Because then if you can do, but if you can't, there's no time, you take it down to that. And what are you going to teach your kids? And you're going to teach them all that. You're going to teach them the simple thing.
You don't shrink into Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna.
That's another thing. Devotees used to go to the supermarket, Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna. Then it's all prasad. Now you can take anything you want. Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shula Prabhupada.